Welcome back to the program. I am very pleased to introduce my next guest. Professor Michael Kraft is a professor emeritus of political science and public and environmental affairs at the esteemed University of Wisconsin in Green Bay. Don't know if that's the reason they have so many great green people coming out of that campus, but I was pleased to see that when I visited on Earth Day about 3 years ago, I think. And so very nice to have you on the show, Professor. Thank you for taking time out in your day to talk to us about this piece you wrote. And it's not that we don't talk about this, you know, on the show a lot, the need for Congress to act, but you know, every now and then, just the way something is worded will get the attention of D.R. Tucker, my co-host. Sorry he couldn't be with us today on air, but he helps arrange the guests on the show. That just really resonates. And you talk about how there has been a lot of progress, but we still need to have comprehensive climate change legislation happening. And you're so right, and yet it's so difficult to see that happening, given, you know, that Republicans, Democrats, progressive conservatives can't, you know, agree on anything, and anything President Obama does gets criticized and shot down almost before it's out of his mouth. And, you know, there's so much at stake in this country, but, you know, when it comes to what's going on with our climate, oceans, species, as we've just been talking about and do all the time here, you know, we don't have time to waste. We don't have, you know, time to just be childish about this and to, you know, have it be politics as usual.
Well, yeah, that was my major point. I understand that it's very unlikely that Congress in the next year or two or three is going to enact national climate change legislation. But I do think, as I'm sure many of your listeners would agree, we're at a tipping point. If we don't do something in the next couple of years, and more than we've accomplished at the state and local level already, and there's been a lot here, I really think the country as a whole, through an act of Congress signed by the president, needs to take a stance. And doing so might, I don't know that we can be sure of this, but it just might be enough to stimulate other nations to do something on their own, particularly China and India and many countries around the world that have been reluctant to do much until the United States acts. Because right now they can say, well, why should we do anything? The United States, the leading greenhouse gas emitter per capita in the world by far, is doing nothing. And as long as we do nothing at the national level, it lets other nations get by, you know, with excuses that, well, if the United States won't act, why should we? And that's what I think has to change.
And why do you think we're doing so much nothing relative to what we should be doing?
Well, you know, I think the reasons are pretty clear. These are what many academics call third-generation environmental issues. That is, they deal with long-term and somewhat less visible, less immediate issues. It's hard to mobilize people on an issue that is not salient to them. We have lots and lots of polls telling us the issue is not seen as urgent by the public. Thanks to the Koch brothers and others, the public is sadly misinformed about climate change. So until we get some definitive evidence that climate change is hurting people, harming the economy, it's very hard to mobilize people to act on the issue. I think that's the bottom line. There's not enough political leadership. And, of course, on the other side, there's plenty of opposition, particularly by the coal companies, but by all fossil fuel industries and, of course, their political representatives. They are fearful of climate change legislation because it will raise the price of fossil fuels and therefore possibly harm their businesses. And there are just not enough people willing to make the case that we have to act regardless of that and find some ways to moderate the impact on the economy. My fear is we'll wait so long to act that people will say, well, when the evidence is right before us, then we'll act. But by then, of course, it will be too late to act.
And we just talked about in the last segment with Monty Thompson.
I heard that, yeah.
Yeah, but it's so true. We can't say it enough. And yet,
right.
Maybe the most influential, you know, player in this, not that it's an actual person, but Mother Nature with the extreme destructive weather we're seeing. You know, how can Americans especially, I mean, look at the, you know, poor Filipino people and you name it, you know, flooding in Pakistan to, you know, fires in Australia, around the world. But, you know, since we are world-class deniers or disassociators, that's now my new term from the film Call to Life, you know, it can only go on for so long that, you know, people are not stupid. I think there might be some selective intelligence or selective tuning in, you know, to all kinds of indicators. But do you think we're reaching critical mass, lack of ability to at least credibly, you know, downplay what we're up against?
Yeah, there's some evidence in recent public opinion polls. I'm by no means an expert on that, but I read them, and there's some evidence that people are becoming a little bit more concerned. In some ways, I think it's helped that we've had, well, helped in an odd sort of way, that we have natural catastrophes, whether it be Hurricane Sandy or Katrina or the recent storm in the Philippines or the persistent wildfires in the West and Australia. You know, this begins to get a little press attention, and people begin to take notice, and this is reflected in the latest public opinion poll. But boy, we're a long way from having enough of a mass of people to prod politicians to act. And as you noted in your opening statement, this is a Congress that, after all, shut down the federal government for 16 days over an issue that could not be won. That is over stopping Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act or defunding it. And boy, climate change would raise a lot more objections, because there are many more people who would object to action on climate change than on the Health Care Reform Act. So, you know, I guess there clearly has been some movement. I think the public is more concerned now than they were a few years ago. There's certainly a lot of evidence in polls that people would support, I guess, what I call moderate action. The Yale Climate, Yale and George Mason University have done a series of polls in the last 5 years showing there's strong majorities in favor of, for example, funding energy research and development, funding improvements in energy efficiency, funding a lot of measures that would reduce our reliance on fossil fuels. But there's enough resistance on the other side that any legislation similar to what the House passed in 2009 today would likely meet a lot of opposition. And understandably, the president can go only so far. The president said in a major speech in June he was done with legislation in Congress on climate change. He'd rather go through executive action with EPA regulations. And the EPA is going to do that, and probably they will get sued when they're done. But the president is admitting that he can't get legislation through Congress. That's his calculation.
The opponent's
Congress
action, he can't get away with, you know, on the one hand opposing regulation and opposing legislation and keeping their heads in the sand forever. But as we have been saying,
there's some bright points in all of this. You see it at the state and local level. You see a cap-and-trade market underway in California. In some ways, state action's a little bit less positive today than it was 4 or 5 years ago. There's been a bit of retrenchment. But still, you have over 1,000 cities that have adopted climate change actions. You obviously have the scientific community that's concerned, but my own reading on that is scientists are not nearly as outspoken and involved as they need to be, because in many ways people, so we have the IPCC studies, the latest one just released this fall, but it falls on deaf ears. There are not enough people out there beating the drums for the IPCC, and scientists themselves don't go on talk shows, to persuade the public. This is really urgent that we take action now. Failing that, I think it's understandable the public is not going to respond with the passion that we need to see for elected officials to say, "Oh, wait a minute, we really need to do something."
Mm-hmm. And I, as listeners know, put a lot of blame on, the media programmers who don't see this as a, as legitimate and as broad and as urgent and complex, a set of issues as our environmental crises are. And, the scientists, many of them are quite well-spoken, like Dr. Michael Mann and Catherine Hayhoe and people I've had on over the years.
Yeah.
But, the media doesn't really recognize them or the stories that are, I think, so important and compelling. We have conversations amongst ourselves, whether it's activists, academics, authors, filmmakers, and yet it doesn't seem to penetrate the mainstream consciousness.
Well, partly I think it's because we spend too much time talking to ourselves.
Yeah.
We can all give speeches, and I can write editorials, and I can write textbooks, but we're speaking to the converted. It's hard to reach people on the other side who are often very close-minded about this issue. It's become a really politicized issue, and it's tough to deal with that.
Yep, it sure is, and that's why I keep knocking on the door of media gatekeepers saying, don't you think this could make for some interesting viewing, and you could maybe bring a new audience, a whole new genre? It's like our life support system on the line. Is that not compelling or dramatic enough?
But one reason I suggested, and this was, of course, a fairly brief op-ed piece I was asked to write a couple of weeks ago, but one reason I suggested I'd like to see legislation and some motion on it is that even if Congress doesn't enact anything, the very fact that legislation is introduced that a hearing is held, that expert witnesses come in. That creates some news stories, and it forces the media to pay attention. And if anything actually serious comes out of this, that is, Congress actually considers doing what the House did in 2009. Let's not forget, in 2009, when the House was Democratic, it passed climate change, national climate change bill. Mm-hmm. The bill did not get through the Senate. And many would blame the Obama White House for that, because this is when the Affordable Care Act was getting all the attention. And so the president sort of dropped the ball, I think, on leadership there. But if we had that again today, I think you could see a lot more media coverage. And it would force the other side to come back and either flat out oppose what is taking place or suggest an alternative. But that at least gets a conversation going, and it generates a lot of news stories that I think we could use.
Absolutely. What do you think of the president's appointment of John Podesta to be his climate advisor? Are you encouraged by that? Many activists are, and he just recused himself from acting on Keystone, which is, as some activists think, is unfortunate because he has come out, you know, as the guy who started the Center for American Progress, certainly being against the Keystone in terms of what it would do to our environment.
It's hard to judge a single appointment in terms of whether it signals a change in the White House position. What the president said all along is his decision on the Keystone pipeline would depend on whether it would, how do you put it, contribute significantly to carbon pollution. Well, almost certainly it would, as most of us see it. And yet
whoever put together the, I guess, the State Department report on the environmental impacts turns out had some conflict of interest in terms of getting the facts out there about what the environmental footprint and impact would be.
Yeah, the president and the White House have taken a kind of mixed position on this, and I understand the importance of that. The president cannot at this stage afford to alienate not only Republicans, but, you know, many Democrats are nervous about climate change, too. It's not a pure partisan issue the way like health care is absolutely right down the line a partisan issue, almost purely partisan. Hmm. But you have a lot of Democrats from coal-producing states and from areas of the country that use a lot of fossil fuels that are reluctant to see a rise in price, particularly when the economy is not yet fully recovered. So the president has to be a little concerned about not losing support among Democrats from coal states and from heavy industry states, and that includes much of the Midwest, where electricity is generated primarily by burning coal. And I think that's the concern, how to get this through without causing too much political harm to the White House, where it needs that support for other legislative initiatives.
Mm, indeed, and health care took up so much bandwidth and time, and gun control.
Well, that's something that, you know, there's a lot of political damage done there, too. So the president, as I think all your listeners know, has suffered a lot in the last couple of months over statements he made that turned out not to be perfectly true, over the flawed opening, should we say, of the Affordable Care Act, the websites, the national one, as well as some of the state exchanges that have gone less well than others. And so he's politically weakened at the moment, and can ill afford to take on other battles where he will lose. And I can understand the president's desire to have the EPA take on climate change and not to address this issue in Congress. At the same time, the EPA is not going to have a national debate. They're not going to hold hearings. They're not going to have all the media-generated events. The EPA will go about quietly developing regulations and then propose them, and that will not generate the kind of news events that I think a congressional debate will.
Right, and then they'll be challenged in whatever way the fossil fuel industry can prolong, you know, making.
Oh, almost certainly, the EPA, whatever EPA comes up with, will face a challenge in federal courts. I mean, that's certain, and so it may or may not have an immediate effect. But what I want to see is a national debate, and when legislation is considered in Congress, and I guess we saw this during the 16 days of shutdown, you're going to have a debate, and there's going to be some news stories, and that's what I would like to see on climate change, because maybe it gets people to say, gee, maybe we really need to address climate change soon and not delay this indefinitely until countries start disappearing under seawater and until forest fires are devastating large areas of the world. Because if we wait that long, it really is too late to act. Even now, there's almost nothing we can do to prevent serious climate change in the next 30 to 40 years, because that will happen due to the carbon and other greenhouse gases that we've already released.
Right, and that would assume that we'd all get on board tomorrow, and that won't happen unless we have, you know, more Americans really tuning into these many issues, and that's only going to happen if, you know, they happen to see it, you know, in their living room or hear it on the radio. You know, and God bless the Progressive Radio Network, as I say all the time, for running shows like these. And we should be here and everywhere because this is for everyone.
Unfortunately, not every network, radio or television, covers these stories. I think you could, even the New York Times, which has been pretty good, has lately cut back on its coverage, according to some analyses. And we certainly see less than adequate coverage by the major news networks, which have a declining audience to boot over the last several decades.
That's
so,
part of the problem is a splintered audience. Hard to reach critical mass.
The audience is not there, and the average, you know, particularly among college students, and not a lot of people who read a daily newspaper and watch evening news broadcasts. Mm-hmm. The last time I saw a demographic analysis, a very, very small percentage of 18 to 25-year-olds watch evening news shows. So they're getting the news from someplace. That's okay, as long as somewhere people can get reliable news, and as long as they can read about a national debate over what this country really needs to do to address climate change. We're just not getting that today. It's like people have given up, think that, well, we'll just handle it quietly through the EPA, and I don't think that's good enough.
I couldn't agree more. And, of course, I know there are people who have tuned out to the mainstream news outlets, media outlets, because they don't cover these kinds of issues, and they want to hear the things that they're concerned about, you know, more, you know, dealt with more often and deeper. So I think CNN got a lot of credit for the Blackfish documentary they did that's had a, you know, really good reaction and impact. If they put on more programs like that, they might find a new audience. Maybe I'm an optimist, but
yeah,
I like
are.
To think so.
But I agree.
You know, if you make
people,
it interesting,
think,
and this stuff is darn compelling, you got to get an audience, right? You'll find
it. Yes, and sometimes, you know, environmentalists maybe need to do more than just issue reports on the latest scientific studies. They need to reach out in different ways. Maybe it's radio programs, maybe it's films, maybe it's music. Maybe it's through Facebook. My wife assures me it's through Facebook that people are making contact. But anything that works, I don't care really what mechanism people use, but somehow you've got to reach people. You've got to inspire them to care about these issues, to read more about it, to debate it with their neighbors, to demand that politicians take action. Short of that, the way our political system works, you're just not going to get policy action at any level of government.
Well, let's leave it on that note. We need a green Oprah or a green Susie Orman or a green Dr. Sanjay. You know, these issues are
something
potential
like
for health
yeah.
and economy. Thanks so
All
much,
right.
Professor Kraft.
Yeah, sure. You're welcome. I enjoyed it.
And if you missed part of the show, tune in to our archives at thegreenfront.com or PRN's site. And I hope you enjoyed these interviews. I certainly did, getting kind of fired up here. And until next week, want to wish you a great green pre-holiday safe week ahead.